All right, the Active family, David here, and today we have a very special episode. We sit down with Brian from BSR Wedding Films, and we talk all about TikTok. Now, Brian has, I think, 750,000 followers on TikTok, and we talk about what is it like being famous on TikTok? Does it lead to more bookings, or is it just all smoke and mirrors? And how do you actually make a successful TikTok video? I think one of his top videos has like 24 million views. Just absolutely mind-blowing. And I just want you guys to know, I'm like just as much interested in this episode as you guys are, because I'm a little bit of a TikTok skeptic. I haven't fully stepped my toes into it, but I know there's people killing it like Brian. So I think you're going to find this conversation extremely interesting because it doesn't really end up where you think it might end up. And I think it's going to be, in the end, extremely encouraging. So you definitely want to stay till the end because we kind of just have a plot twist of everything. So let's get into it. Let's talk to Brian and let's just get started. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for hopping on this episode. And for all of you guys listening, we were all ready to start, and then a whole construction crew came outside, and there's like a jackhammer. It's a pretty low rumble, so if you hear anything, that's what it is. Hopefully, we got it taken out. But I'm here with Brian, and I'm just so stoked to talk with him because he has, I believe, right before I hopped on, I checked your TikTok, and you're at like 750,000 followers and counting. And then something like a few million, I mean, multi-million views, and a couple TikToks that have lots of millions of views. And so I kind of want to just, we'll get into Brian's story too throughout the podcast, but I want to start in with kind of your TikTok journey. So maybe you can kind of weave that in from, oh, this is kind of how I started wedding films, and then I discovered TikTok and something weird happened. I'm not really, like, kind of take me through that journey of wedding films and then discovering TikTok and like how this became that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on, David. I'm just excited to be here. So, but yeah, actually it's over 800,000 now followers on TikTok, but it's slowed down. It's okay. Sorry. It's slowed down recently.
He's humble yeah. too, guys. Just extremely humble.
But so I started filming. So I've been filming weddings for actually almost 20 years altogether, but the first 10 years was just very sporadic. I did a few weddings here and there over those first 10 years. But then it was about 2015 when I really got into it full time. And just every year since then, you know, started shooting more and more weddings. But in particular, so as far as TikTok goes, so, you know, I think TikTok started around in 2019 or so, and it was kind of toward the end of 2019 when I you know, started hearing about it and saw a few people mentioning it on the Facebook forums. And I was like, hey, maybe I should check this out. So I remember I created an account in late 2019, but hadn't posted anything on there for just at all for a couple months. I just had created the account to have it. And then a couple months in, I posted a few videos. And, you know, as most people, when you first post something on TikTok, they actually, your first video tends to do pretty well just because they want to get you hooked on it. And so
everyone's
a lot of people. Yeah. But then, so that was pretty cool. So before that though, I liked the idea of, you know, these very short videos because, you know, before that I had been, you know, with Instagram stories, I remember posting similar types of content, you know, on Instagram stories. And so I initially just started, you know, taking these moments from weddings and that I was already posting on my stories, and I posted them on TikTok. And so before that, you know, I really enjoy the longer films that we create, you know, 5, 6, 7 minute films. And, you know, there's so much good, just the storytelling pieces from within that. And, but, you know, with TikTok having this delivery format to where we could take these just little pieces from those films, I thought that was pretty intriguing. And so, but yeah, I wasn't really planning on it being, you know, something that big of a deal. And it just kind of gradually over time kept growing and growing. And for me, I just really kind of leaned into these raw emotional moments that would happen on the wedding day. And that's a lot of some of the stuff that I was posting early on, you know, just these emotional groom reactions, these first look moments between fathers and their daughters.
And you weren't trying to like get millions of views, right? You were just like, oh, this seems interesting and I think people will like it. Or was there some like system to those early days?
So those early days, I would say, I was just literally posting stuff to kind of see, posting content that I liked, you know, that I connected with, but, you know, I wasn't sure what the audience was even like. But then as I started posting more of these authentic emotional moments, you know, just the nature of TikTok and the comments and the audience, you know, started getting lots of comments on the videos. And, you know, and so I saw that, okay, there's an audience that likes these authentic moments.
And how quickly did that grow? Because you said your first video on TikTok was kind of just like whatever, and you got some views. But then, as you corrected me earlier, at almost 800,000 followers, like, was it like, okay, first video, I don't know, a couple thousand, and then it just dropped, and then it was like nothing? Or was it a steady climb? Like, when did you start to be like, whoa, what is happening?
Okay, so the moment I realized kind of the key and the potential to TikTok was when I, you know, so before that, pretty much all the videos that I would post, or I think a lot of filmmakers would post, would be highlights or, you know, these really pretty montages, you know, with music. But it wasn't until I started posting some videos with literally no music, it was just like a single clip from the day with, you know, really good audio from that moment. And that's when I realized, you know, it wasn't these, you know, these highlights and these montages that people wanted to watch. It was literally just these single takes. And so, I mean, the first one that really blew up was a first look moment I had between a bride and a groom, that he was blindfolded and she could see him. And it was just this really genuine, funny, heartwarming interaction. And that's when I realized, okay, this is what the TikTok audience is connecting with, are these just kind of these emotional, interesting interactions. So before that one, you know, I had posted a few different, you know, kind of, just more of like a music montage, and those didn't do as well. But so then after that point, I started just posting more like, okay, here's a short first look moment between the bride and her father. And, you know, that would get a lot of views. Here's a, you know, a groom having a genuine reaction as, you know, as the bride's coming out, you know, coming down the aisle. And so that's most of what I started posting then, would just be these moments without music, just the, I mean, there might be music from, you know, if it was from a ceremony, then you'd hear the actual sound from the ceremony.
That's crazy interesting, because I think my default, along with so many other filmmakers, would be, oh, we want to make it artsy. We want to, like, we put in all this work to this film. We're just, why would we not post the snippets of what we put so much work into, or portrait session, because that's kind of what does well on Instagram. But you're saying, in a weird way, TikTok's opposite. It wants just like real, as raw and real as it can be, which is actually fascinating to me. And so, like, what is your process of now finding clips and like editing them? Do you finish a whole film and then say, okay, what little clips can I take out from this for TikTok and things like that? Or while you're editing, kind of set things aside? And what have you found, like, parts of the day that work best and things like that?
Early on, so kind of throughout 2020, when as it was growing, during that time, I was literally just kind of going back to weddings from the prior year or two. And I was going back to, you know, you asked about which moments. So yeah, it would be literally any first look moments. That was the majority of it, you know, first look moments, whether it's between the bride and the groom or, you know, with her dad. Those were some of the main ones. But now a lot of what I do is, you know, as I'm going through the edit of the film, I may find some other things that I feel like are good, and I'll pull them out. So, like, you know, for example, one of the videos I have that has done really well is a couple is they're just sitting there watching a photo slideshow that was playing during the reception. And so this clip in particular, the bride and groom are sitting watching a slideshow, and it's showing pictures of their son. It's the bride's son from a previous marriage, and he's a stepdad. And it's literally just, you know, the camera's on the tripod, and I forgot, I didn't even realize I was recording. I usually don't record that part, and they just had like just this very genuine reaction to the slideshow. You know, they both cry at the same time. He looks over to the son. And that was a clip that like I had already finished their full film. I had even sent them a bunch of raw footage, and that I didn't even initially send them the raw footage of that moment. And it was only afterward when I was just kind of going through, I found that piece, and that video it's got on my YouTube Shorts, it's got like 10 million views, and on the TikTok, it's got like 18 million. And then, Love Stories TV has posted that one. It's got millions on theirs as well.
That blows my mind because it was literally just like an afterthought on your end.
Yeah.
What? So it's kind of like, as filmmakers, if we do want to get into more short form content like TikTok or YouTube Shorts, it's maybe looking at those things that we often overlook, but that like are extremely sentimental. I feel like that's maybe the key, is like the most sentimental moments that are just no frills, unedited, like one or two shots, right?
Yeah, and it's, some of the other videos that I've seen from other filmmakers that do well are some of those moments maybe right before the ceremony or maybe right after the ceremony that we don't typically think to capture because they're not like the pretty shot that we're going to use in the main film, but sometimes it's just these little, especially, if you've got the bride or groom mic'd up, you're going to often get some pretty good audio from that. And so, maybe just something that the groom leans over and says to the bride, or, it's looking for, holding the shot a bit longer than you may think, recording reactions, so one thing I try to do more of, especially during like the reception during the dances, I'm thinking more of, don't just capture a couple dancing or the father and the daughter dancing, look also for some of the reactions. Because during that time too, there's often, you'll get some really good, authentic reactions from a grandparent, or maybe it's the groom that's watching from the side. So I'm looking for those as well, not just like, the main action that's going on the dance floor.
Yeah, it's really key, because then you can like put together a tiny story. And is there, now that you're have TikTok in mind, so like the dancing is a great example, are there certain ways now that you capture like the ceremony or the first look or maybe getting ready that kind of digs even deeper into that example you gave of like holding things longer, like kind of a step-by-step process that you now use to maybe even tell the couple like it's okay to feel these things, or like, I don't know, like what are some other parts of the day that you've kind of changed, and then how have you changed those filming those things?
So one thing I would say in terms of how I film those, so I used to, like, I kind of simplify it in terms of how I'm going to capture it. Like, I don't overthink, like, oh, I got to get like the perfect angle, and maybe even, sometimes I would maybe even like do a little bit of movement, like a gimbal movement during this key moment. And I've realized, okay, during this, like a first look moment, for example, like I used to think I had to, get a sweeping shot as that happened. I realized, no, okay, just hold a steady shot, don't move. And then later, afterward, you can get some of the cinematic stuff. But so it's just kind of simplifying it and even realizing, yeah, like that first look moment doesn't have to be like the absolute perfect lighting. Like you can set that up afterward, if you want to get the perfect lighting. And then also, yeah, like I said, just start rolling a little bit sooner than normal. Like don't wait till the last second to start rolling, because sometimes there's, you get some, some good sound bites leading up to what's going to happen. So, and then also, like I said, just holding the shot even longer, because you just, sometimes just some genuine moments will happen afterward. As far as telling my couples, honestly, so one thing I do feel like there's almost this pressure on the groom to have a reaction. And so that's one thing that, with social media now, I feel like there is this pressure on the groom to like show a reaction or, to cry.
Even if he may or may not be like feeling it.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's personalities are a little bit different. So I tell the groom, I'm like, don't just be yourself, But what I've found though is, because of the types of emotional videos that I put out there, I tend to attract these couples who maybe it's the guy who's very extroverted and emotional, but and maybe the bride's more subdued or vice versa. But I tend to usually, one of the couples, the bride or the groom, tends to be very expressive and emotional, and they'll, regardless, they're going to have a genuine reaction, and they're not, it's authentic. And so, yeah, that's one thing too. I just, I just tell them, just enjoy the day. Don't feel like you have to
perform.
Perform, exactly.
Yeah.
Just be yourself and just let things happen naturally.
Yeah, I love that. And that kind of flows into the next question I have is, all right, so you've kind of figured out these high sentimental moments work really well. And all of a sudden, you just started getting all these TikTok views of simple things like emotional first looks and, you know, bride walking down the aisle and slideshow things. And you're just like, okay, wow, this is crazy. This conversation is just as much for everyone listening as it is for me, because I am very skeptical of TikTok. I haven't actually gotten on. And so like, I was really excited to talk with you to just figure out, okay, how do these things work? And I think what I'm most skeptical of that I've kind of seen on TikTok is some friends who have gotten on there. Sure, they have a lot of views, but then when it actually comes to those views translating to bookings, it usually like falls flat to where, oh, I have hundreds and thousands and millions of views, but then they tell me like, oh, the TikTok demographic, this was a couple years ago, so I'm curious if it's changed, at around that time was basically 18 and under. So you'd get all these views, but then no one in marrying age. And if they were, they weren't like going to spend a lot on a wedding video. So it was almost like a smoke and mirrors kind of a thing. So what I'm curious to hear from you, and we can kind of talk about, is like, okay, you've built this massive audience. You get a lot of views on your TikToks. Do those translate to bookings? And then like, how do those translate to bookings? Yeah.
It's a good question. So the short answer is they don't translate into very many bookings at all. That's the short answer. The longer answer is it has translated into higher end bookings in the sense that it has helped my overall brand and my overall, I guess, credibility, you could say. But in terms of, so I've actually booked very few weddings from couples who strictly found me on TikTok. Now I've booked a handful, but so yeah, the demographic now, I mean, it's definitely much more saturated than it was 2 years ago, but I know of other wedding videographers who, from what I hear, they actually do book quite a few through TikTok. But for me, so, like the vast majority of couples who do reach out to me that found me through TikTok, they tend to be much lower budget. And so, you know, it's been a very small handful of a little bit higher end couples who have booked me because they found me directly through there. So today though, the vast majority of my bookings do come through the relationships that I've already established, you know, through planners and through photographers. Like those are, so that's where, you know, my referrals are coming from, are through planners and photographers. And so that's where a couple may first hear about me was through them. But then when they, you know, look at my website and my social media, that kind of, they're like, oh, okay, this guy must be legit, you know, so let's go with him. But they're not necessarily finding me first there.
Dude, that's really fascinating, because I think, especially if you're just starting out in the industry, you could very easily look at someone's TikTok following and be like, oh, they must be crushing it. And then you equate the success with the TikTok following. So then you spend the next 2 years just really trying to get successful on TikTok and putting all these hours and hours and hours of time. But I love that you're just honest, because it sounds like, yeah, TikTok is great for the social proof of saying, okay, once a planner comes in, photographer, like this guy's legit, you know, he definitely can command the prices he's charging. But it almost sounds like if you are not putting relationships with photographers and planners at the top, then it doesn't matter. Like you're kind of going to be almost wasting time. You could have 1 or 2 million followers and you might be like, oh, this is awesome. But it's probably one of those cases of getting to the top of the hill and being like, oh shoot, I focused on the wrong thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So for me, the number one priority has been focusing on those relationships and just providing a good service to the couples that I, you know, on their wedding day, and, you know, having good relationships with, you know, the other vendors on the day. And that really has been the number one key to my growth over the past couple of years. And yeah, really the social media followers, that's just, you know, very secondary in terms of my growth. And, but yeah, I mean, in terms of me wanting to kind of shoot, you know, higher budget weddings, you know, like I said, you know, I've had vast majority of the inquiries, they're just lower budget and just, you know, just not my ideal client. And, you know, so I will say this. So I have been, though, balancing this, you know, I mentioned, you know, I've really leaned into these authentic emotional moments. So really my ideal couple is those that value that authenticity, but also are, but also, you know, a little bit more of the luxury type wedding. And so I've, you know, in terms of my branding, I have tried to balance that of that's just, you know, that's the kind of wedding that I want to shoot. And so, you know, there's luxury high end that's, you know, maybe the couple is a bit stiff or whatever, you know, that maybe they don't want to show their emotions, but, and I don't attract that type of couple, but I'll, so when I do shoot the higher end weddings, they tend to be this more authentic, in terms of their emotions, you know, not, you know, wanting those real moments captured and being willing to, you know, to show those moments.
Yeah. And I think it's key too. It's just the whole idea of you shoot what you show. And I think, like, I just did my talk at Venture, and what I've noticed is the best wedding films always have, like, emotional couples. I think as filmmakers, we might see other people doing really emotional, authentic work and say, well, that's not really my style. I like to do more, like, super, super artsy. But, like, my talk, really what it was about was I analyzed some of the best wedding films that have come out in the last 10 or so years. I try to look at the best of the best in artistry and emotions and things like that. And, like, whatever your style is, what I found is every filmmaker should be trying to get the most emotional couples possible. And that doesn't necessarily mean, like, couples that are all criers per se, but, like, couples that are extremely comfortable showing their emotions, whether that's, like, their criers or whether that's their, like, crazy party animals, you know, and just because that could transcend style. And I think that's something just really key, because I think some people could be listening to that and be like, well, I'm not really after emotional couples, so that doesn't apply to me. But I'm like, no, we should all be after, like, the most emotional couples, and we should be showing things on our Instagram that, yes, are artsy, but, like, have people that are comfortable. Like, is that kind of what you've, I'm sure you're nodding your head a lot, it seems.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah, and that's a good point too. You know, being emotional doesn't mean you're crying. It can mean it's just showing your personality, being, you know, being very expressive, just enjoying every moment of the day. Yeah, like, it might be, you know, a recent couple that I shot that, you know, they weren't criers, but they were just, like, the groom was just full of joy the whole day, you know, just so happy that, you know, everyone was there, and that came out through his, you know, just hugging everybody and just having a lot of joy on his face. And so, and that's goes to your point of, you know, emotional doesn't mean crying, but also, like you said, you should show, that's what the type of content that we should be showing is these emotional moments. And that's what people, you know, as humans, that's what we connect to. That's really my goal with every video, whether it's my longer highlight films or any short video. I want there to be, some of the emotional moments might be, you know, something funny, something sad, or something just, for whatever reason, just draws you in.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's just like, let's focus on emotions and not just, and that's something, like, that even convicts me, because I love the artistry of composition and color. And as I look through my page, a lot of it is these very, like, high level composition moments, but not necessarily any short clips of just emotional moments. And I think, like, I've even noticed for myself, as I look back at some, you know, recent inquiries I've been getting and things like that, they tend to not be as, like, connected with their emotions. They're more like, oh, like, it's just so cool, I just want to do something cool. And then when I look back at some of my favorite films, which were some of, like, my first films I ever made in 2012, 2013, the compositions weren't anything crazy, but, like, the couple was so comfortable with who they were. Like, I think back on this wedding, and this couple had been dating or knew each other since they were, like, 5 years old. And the film starts with the groom saying, yeah, at 5 years old, I gave her a little ring from my Cracker Jack box and I knew I was going to marry her. And he's just, like, so giddy. And she is too. And, like, I watched that film. I was glued the whole way. There were so many technical errors, you know, and the certain editing things. But that was a film that got a million views on my YouTube. And some of my latest films that are so, like, artistically great and impress other filmmakers, they just don't do as well. And so I'm like, when I see the best filmmakers crushing it, it's like when you can weave the high level of artistry with high level emotion. And if you were to choose one, it's like almost the emotion is the most important. So, dude, I love this conversation. And then I kind of want to go back because I don't want to miss this point about the planners, because I know we talked about, and photographers, because I know we're kind of talking before we came into the podcast that, you know, we were both discussing, man, we're both kind of more introverted. And on the day of, it can be hard to like be ourselves and, you know, connect with other people or like talk over the photographer. And I know that's something like I've struggled with myself of wanting to get connections with planners and coordinators and photographers, but most of the day I'm just so in my head on getting certain shots and certain things like that, or being introverted, or, you know, have anxiety about something on the day of, that I get through the whole wedding day or a whole year of shooting and be like, man, I really didn't connect with anybody. So like being more soft-spoken or being more introverted, how do you actually like form relationships with these planners if you're not like this, hey, here's my life story, like we're best friends? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it starts with, number one, just on the actual wedding, just doing a great job, being, you know, just trying to have, you know, at least some small talk and just genuinely just being, you know, thankful and grateful to be there. And it doesn't, you know, just making sure that you, you know, say hello to the planner and, you know, things like that. And also with the photographer, just, you know, from the beginning, just going up to, if it's someone that you haven't worked with, just going up to them and just being real friendly with them, and just kind of establishing the sense that, you know, we're here, we're going to be working together today, and, you know, want to do our best to serve the couple today. So one of the keys is, you know, after the wedding is just being sure, you know, and most videographers are probably doing this, but you'd be surprised that some planners I've talked to where after the wedding, like they never see the video, or, you know, the videographer doesn't tag them for whatever reason. And so I think most of us are pretty good about, you know, tagging everyone involved, but some planners, they don't necessarily see any of the video afterwards. So just being intentional with making sure that, you know, after the wedding that those who are involved get to see the work. And
is that just a simple email, like, loved working with you, here's the film?
Yeah, it could be. So sometimes it's an email where you send them the video directly, or it's, you know, just, you know, Instagram tagging them. And then also in the messages, just, you could send something in the messages there, you know, thanks again, it was such a wonderful wedding, thanks for all the hard work you did. Also, too, you know, with Instagram now, you can do a share. What's it called? When you can
collaborate. You can do the collaboration.
Collaborate. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, collaboration is another way, a great way to just get others involved. Like sometimes I'll.
So that's what. Just if people don't know, it's the Instagram feature where when you post something, you can invite a collaborator to that post so that it posts on your page and their page, and so then you're saying you would invite, like, the planner as a collaborator on that post.
Yeah. So, and the thing with the collaborator, you know, you can only pick one person. And so sometimes I'll collaborate with the actual bride so that it shows up, you know, to her followers and her friends. But yeah, if it's a planner that you want to continue working with, and you feel like this video would be a good representation of the types of weddings that they do, you know, maybe you would collaborate with the planner, maybe it's the photographer. It just kind of depends on what that video clip that you're posting, you know, what the purpose of it is. And
so it sounds like every post you do, trying to have one collaborator in mind and making sure it's like edited for that, and probably even the caption, that it's not too like, hey, I love doing all this thing, to where it would look weird if that was on their page.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, keep that in mind too. Yeah. So if you do a collaboration, yeah, make sure your caption is something that it's not just talking about yourself it needs to be, you know, you need to be aware of where that's showing up, and keep it more neutral like that, so where it makes sense to their followers as well. Yeah, along the lines of the planner too, my wife does a really good job of helping communicate and network with me. So just in terms of just following up and, you know, sending thank you gifts.
Oh, you send thank you gifts to the planners?
Yeah. So we'll send, just every now and then we'll send, you know, just some sort of, you know, maybe if it's a planner I hadn't worked with before and you know, they referred me and we book a wedding, then, you know, we'll send them some sort of customized thank you with, you know, maybe a water bottle with their initials on it or.
Oh, wow. And is this just in like a box that you get from like UPS and then like has some like crinkle paper? Like, what does that look like?
It's, I forget the exact website we use, but you can go, you know, there's websites where you can order the gift straight from the website and then they'll ship it straight to to the address, and they'll do all the, we don't even have to do any of the boxing or anything.
Oh, so you just order it and then it goes straight to the planner.
Order it and it goes, yeah, and you can like write a note with it.
And you forget the name of the website?
I can look it up if you give me 1 minute here.
Yeah, look it up. Yeah, and I'll kind of had some thoughts. So yeah, guys, it just seems like, because I think about working with planners and coordinators and I get really like, you know, I have to be perfect and all these things and I'm a crazy extrovert, but it just seems like what Brian is saying is just like, okay, it's simple social skills, saying hi, coordinating with them, talking with them throughout the wedding day, being like, hey, this is what I need, or thank you so much for doing a good job, and then reconnecting at the end and then sending a gift and then sending the film. And I think too, we as filmmakers put too much pressure on ourselves that we have to make the best impression with every single photographer and every single coordinator, where there's going to be certain weddings where for whatever reason, you're not going to gel with the photographer or the coordinator. And that's like totally fine. Just like in life, there's certain people that you're like, I don't get along with that person. And you kind of just move on. But if you just keep being yourself, there will be, because in my experience, it just takes one or two photographers or planners to completely change your bookings for the next year. So if you work with 20 weddings and just keep it simple, like what we just outlined and talked about, in say you do that all of 2023, in 2024, just by process of statistics, you're probably going to have one or two planners that like you. and then you just, it kind of has that compound interest effect. And then in 3 years from now, you're like, sweet. Like I'm getting mainly bookings for coordinators. So I think just to boil it all down, be nice. Like if you right now you're talking to zero people on the wedding day and doing like zero connection, just be like, okay, at the next wedding, my simple goal is to say hi and to send the film after. And of course, you know, and then maybe the next wedding you send a gift or something. So I think, let's see, Brian looked up on his phone that company he was talking about.
It's Mark and Graham was the name. Mark and Graham.
Mark, like M-A-R-K?
Yes. M-A-R-K and Graham. G-R-A-H-A-M.
Okay. And so you could just order gifts and send it to people. Do you do that for couples too, like as a thank you gift?
No, haven't done that.
No, but that's the couples yeah. Don't matter. It's only about the coordinators.
But yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, so I was going to say, you mentioned, yeah, it's kind of this compound interest. You know, it's just kind of this snowball. It's not something that you can just happen automatically. It does take time. And like, you had a good point of, you know, maybe each year your goal is to maybe add one or two additional people that you network with. And so, yeah, I mean, for me, like I said, I had started in 2015 is when I really went full time. And at that time, I filmed a wedding for the bride who she at the same time was starting her wedding planning business. And so, you know, she started referring me and like that, she was literally like my only referral source for like the first year. But through those couple of weddings that she referred me, you know, then there were some photographers I met and did a few more. So like each year, you know, I just add a few more weddings. And you know, also too, like you don't have to connect with every vendor, you know, just the nature of our personalities. We're not going to all, you know, we can't all be loved by everyone. And so you kind of have to realize it's okay if you work a wedding with someone and you realize, okay, it's maybe not my ideal type of client and wedding. And it's okay to not necessarily, you don't have to pursue relationships with everybody. You know, there's just a handful of photographers that I really enjoy working with, because we kind of just know each other's personalities and our rhythm throughout the wedding day. And
but that stuff takes time. It probably took years.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. Like I said, just every year, just, you know, for me, I make it a goal to, you know, add on maybe like another one or two planners that I can.
To your roster.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I love that you said that. I mean, I think John and Nick at How to Film Weddings talked about this, but I just got reminded of it at a family party I was at. It's kind of a tangent, but it's applicable, is we're all talking about cooking and we smoked ribs and everyone was sitting around the table talking about, oh, this is how I smoke ribs, this is how I do it, blah, 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 blah. And then one guy's like, well, you know, the longer you smoke them, it's always going to be better. So if you have time to do it for multiple days, you know, it's just going to be more tender. And I don't know, just the thought that came into my mind is, wow, that's like so much like life. I feel like every single thing in my life that I find like extremely valuable, and that's not just like, oh, that made me happy for like a season or, you know, a day. are things that I was patient with and did like little things over time, over years. And when those turn into a positive thing that is created at the end of that multi-year of small things is always something that I like enjoy almost for like the rest of my life. Take like fitness for a while, you know, I wasn't having much progress, but I was working every day. And now I'm like, oh, well, I've seen a lot of growth there, or relationships or business. And I think planners are the same way. It's, I think one of the reasons why a lot of filmmakers struggle is because planners isn't something that you can just do in a week. It's not something, oh, I can buy a course and, you know, I can just post a couple times on Instagram, even TikTok. You can do that all from your editing studio. But like planners, we hear over and over, and photographers are like the thing, and it's so obvious, but it's the last thing we do because it's the hardest thing. And if I were to encourage anyone here, it's just like, hey, do the thing that your competition is unwilling or unable to do and that makes them the most uncomfortable, because that's where you'll stand out. And I think the most uncomfortable thing is relationships and like putting yourself out there. And if you could do that, you'll be ahead. And if you can be disciplined and patient, obviously, is the whole thing. Dude, that's great. One other question I had as we kind of close this out is, okay, so we kind of went on this journey of, man, this guy's famous on TikTok and this is awesome. And this is kind of like how you got there. And then we kind of got to the middle of, well, maybe it's not all it's cracked up to be. And a lot of it is just social proof. And actually what's we should really be focusing on is photographers and planners. And we're kind of like ending it with, okay, well, we have Brian, BSR Wedding Films, and here we are now today going into 2023. You're still obviously successful on TikTok. You're getting into YouTube Shorts. So knowing what you know now about the effectiveness of leads to bookings on TikTok and YouTube, what are you going to kind of lean into on 2023? Are you going to keep doing TikTok? Are you going to do YouTube Shorts? Like what, where are you kind of headed? What would you tell people going into 2023 from your experience?
So what I would say is I would encourage people to lean more into YouTube Shorts, because YouTube, they're doing everything they can to compete with TikTok and Instagram Reels. Part of my motivation initially, well, okay, so a couple years ago, you know, before my, when you, you know, you can monetize YouTube, I really wanted to get to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, because once you, I don't know if it's, I think it's still the case, but you have to have 1,000 followers on YouTube and then you can start to monetize. And I was like, that seems pretty cool. Post a video that I've already made and make a little bit of money. And so that was like initially, like I just wanted to get to 1,000 followers on there to make some passive ad revenue on there. So, but YouTube Shorts, In 2023, they're going to start changing their monetization model, and they're actually doing with TikTok, it's just like a very specific fund that they use to pay out creators, and it's really not a whole lot. But YouTube Shorts, the potential is so much higher just to make passive income from their ad revenue on there. So going forward, I would say that, you know, it's much harder to grow on TikTok now than it was a couple years ago, just because it is so saturated. I mean, I've even found it with my own videos. Like, honestly, a lot of the videos I post now just don't really get the engagement that they used to 6 months ago, 12 months ago. And it's maybe just, you know, partly it's the videos aren't as good, or, you know, just the audience, you know, whatever. But I would encourage to look more into YouTube Shorts. But then, for myself too, Instagram though still is like the main place where I want to really show off my work, because that is still like, you know, I mentioned the planners and photographers, but in terms of like direct, when couples reach out to me directly, the majority of them actually come through Instagram. And so I would focus on the content that you're posting there. Like for me, that's, I feel like TikTok and my YouTube Shorts, it's like this very ambiguous audience that I have. It's, I don't really know who those people are. Whereas Instagram, I'm following all the other vendors in my area. You know, I'm following the couples on there. People tend to find me on Instagram. And so I'm much more intentional about the type of content that I post on there, in terms of, you know, like I said, I'm kind of targeting this higher end but emotional type of couple. And so pretty much everything I post on there, I want it to have that feel you know, I wanted to have that image and that branding.
Yeah. No, that's really good. I think, I agree. Like in 2023, Instagram and YouTube Shorts are going to be the thing. And yeah, like what Brian is saying is YouTube just, I think like a month ago or less, announced, hey, we're going to allow advertisers to put ads on YouTube Shorts. So essentially, you're going to get similar ad revenue reads that you would get on longer form content on YouTube Shorts, which are like under a minute or something. I don't know the exact number. But I'm just like, guys, as wedding filmmakers, yeah, if you're on TikTok right now, go to YouTube Shorts, because there's actually a way for you to make money. Like imagine you're on TikTok and one of your clips got like 24 million views. If you got 24 million views on YouTube, I don't know the exact numbers, so I'm not going to pretend like I do, but I think their ad reads are pretty high. They haven't quite figured out everything yet, but like if you got 24 million views on YouTube, like a YouTube video, that would be like 10 grand or something like that. And so I don't know how that's going to translate to Shorts, but even if it was a part of that, like imagine if you're being successful on TikTok, getting millions or even hundreds of thousands, and then you're able to make, let's just say on the low end, $1,000, $500 extra a month. Like that's awesome for work that you're already doing. And so I think if I was, you know, really just looking for a source of passive income, I would go back through all my past work. And if you haven't gotten on TikTok, just don't worry about it. And make a YouTube channel, post your full weddings, just because why not? And then clip out all the most emotional moments as YouTube Shorts and make hundreds of them and just like post them every week. I mean, you could be looking at, you could be sitting on like 10 grand in 2023 by just YouTube Shorts, which would be nuts. And I think too, yeah, what you mentioned is Instagram. Like for me as well, that's still the main place that I book couples, because it's the social proof of a bride books a photographer, then they go to your page and they see that, oh, that photographer's following you, and then it has that trust and things like that. So yeah, no, I think that's excellent. And then let's see, we got, I don't know, like 5 or 6 more minutes here. But I kind of wanted to close out, because you've been doing this for a while. You've gone through multiple seasons of your business. I always like to ask, like, do you have any wedding horror stories that, whether it be at an actual wedding, or maybe it was something that even you said and you're like, oh shoot, I botched that so bad, or I don't know, any funny stories. They could not even be horror stories. It could just be like, oh, I was traveling for this wedding and I left all this, or, you know, just like funny business stories that you're just like, wow, I was dumb. Or I don't know, anything like that.
I do get asked this question, but I honestly don't, I'm not very good at answering this one.
Okay.
The most interesting story was, you know, I had a wedding where the father of the bride just was gone after the ceremony, didn't show up for the reception. So that was sad. So I don't, I mean,
sad. Yeah. Yeah, that's maybe. Well, maybe we could take the question. Let's see. You could think about that, but we could end it on too, like, okay, how long have you been shooting weddings?
So the very first wedding I shot was in 2004.
Okay, so a while.
Yeah, 18 years, but
that's a while, man. That's a while.
Yeah, but like I said, those first 10 years, the first 10 years I did, I think like 15 total weddings in those 10 years. And then...
Oh, I see. And so then, it was a very slow burn.
Yes, it was just like a total side thing that I didn't really... It was, you know, I was doing video production for a company, and weddings, you know, I just did those on the side on occasion as... you know, friends that knew I did video.
Okay. Yeah, but you've kind of been semi. I guess my question would just be like, okay, now looking back, now that you are really, seems like honing in on that target couple, and, you know, certain things are starting to pop off for you in a good way, and, you know, kind of getting that momentum in your business, where looking back, if you were talking to Brian in 2004, knowing what you know now, like, what would you tell him? Would you say, oh yeah, let's get into weddings sooner? Or are you even like, man, I kind of want to get out of weddings, or, you know, I don't want to do weddings as long, or just, you know, what advice would you give, you know, Brian 10 years ago? And it doesn't have to be even business advice. It could even be mentality of like, yeah, don't sweat the small stuff, or spend more time in your personal life here. Like, it doesn't really matter, bank account, or it could be a practical, like anything that you would kind of say.
Well, I would say, so just over time, with experience, you really, like, I've really just learned a lot with experience. Like, I've realized that I think early on I would overcomplicate what it means to shoot a wedding. And I would just have like a lot of stress going into the wedding day thinking like, oh man, I hope I don't miss anything. Like, I got to capture everything. And so I guess just realizing that I can simplify the process on the actual wedding day and don't feel like I need to capture every single thing. Like, for me, it's like, as long as you capture some of these key parts of the day, like all the extra little moments that happen, it's just kind of icing on the cake. And so with time, the more you do weddings, you kind of get into this rhythm of knowing, because I also edit all the videos, like in my head as I'm shooting, I already kind of know, okay, that was a great piece. These vows that they're saying right now, like, wow, I've got my whole video just from the vows that they're saying during the ceremony. Like, everything else is just kind of, you know, icing on the cake. You know, these vows is really what I'm going to hone in on as like the key storytelling piece of their longer film. Simplifying it, not thinking you have to overcomplicate it. And then also, just being prepared too, in terms of, on the actual wedding day, like if there's any downtime, like I'm just kind of thinking ahead to late, like don't assume you're going to have time later on to maybe just, you know, set up your light stands or set up tripods. So like early on, I like to just get things set up. Like if there's any downtime, because there'd be times when, you know, maybe I would wait till right before ceremony to start setting up the gear. But, you know, sometimes like literally all the prep stuff goes up right until ceremony start time. So you're kind of scrambling last minute. And so it's just thinking ahead and getting some things set up. Yeah. Also too, I mean, like with the gear and the technology is so good these days that, you know, one of the things early on when I was shooting, you know, I'd always kind of worry like, oh, is this shot going to be in focus? Or is this shot going to be stable? You know, but you know, the cameras are so good now with autofocus capabilities and the in-camera stabilization. Like, it's hard to mess up capturing. Like, you know, it's pretty easy to get good focus, to get your exposure correct. And so, you know, whereas several years ago, I was maybe more thinking about the technical side, like, oh, I hope I get, like, because our cameras are, you know, so good now that I don't have to think about the technical side as much on the actual day. And I can just focus on the composition, focus on being ready to go when things are happening. And also, you know, as we said, just enjoying the day and, you know, looking to make sure you're connecting with other people there.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah, I can echo all that of just overcomplicating and the wedding day. Like, it's really about trusting in your own abilities as you do it more. Oftentimes you look back on your best films and say, well, I didn't capture even that moment in its entirety, but it's still one of my favorite films. And that's when you realize, oh, I should just capture what I am like inspired by on the day. Because if I'm inspired by it, it's probably going to end up in the edit. And if I'm not inspired by it, then it's probably not worth capturing. Now, of course, you can't be like, was not inspired by the ceremony. You know, I'm not going to capture it. But for all those like little in-between moments, that's kind of what I like to hold by as my first. I like to trust my gut. So if I'm in the bridal prep room and everyone's just hanging out, there's really nothing that's like grabbing me. I won't stop there initially. I'll be like, is there anything I can do that can make this interesting? And if I'm like, not really, I'd rather spend my energy other place. I'll just be like, I'm going to go, you know, like you said, set up for the ceremony or do something else. So no, I love all that. Well, dude, I think, is there anything else that you wanted to add as like a final statement on either TikTok or shorts or like anything that you found as like, oh, this last thing I learned in the last year was like a game changer for me, or a piece of gear, or just anything you want to kind of close it with?
Yeah, just, I mean, really kind of figure out what it is you enjoy shooting, like the types of weddings, and don't feel like you have to do it all. So, you know, if, you know, for me, I really don't do the very many destination weddings. I do maybe one a year. Like I found that I like to just stay local in Dallas and not really travel too much. You know, I'll go to some other parts of Texas occasionally where I can drive to, but, you know, maybe once a year I'll fly out to another wedding. But I found that maybe a few years ago, I would see these destination wedding films and think, oh, that's so amazing. But, you know, I've realized you can make just as much money shooting a wedding locally as you maybe, or maybe even less sometimes if you travel to a wedding. And so for me, I've just been okay, you know, just understanding that I'll see other wedding films and I'm just inspired by them and I'm like, wow, like this is amazing. But then realizing it's okay that I don't have to do these crazy, you know, time lapse moments, you know, like
Sculpting with time.
Sculpting with time. Yeah. So sculpting with time, you know, they do some really cool time lapse stuff. And, you know, every now and then I'll watch some of their films. I'm like, wow, like I need to start doing that in mine. And so like, I'll try it, but then I realize, okay, I don't really know how to do this properly. And like, I'll just, and it's okay that I don't include like these really cool time lapse moments. You know, I would experiment with it maybe every now and then, or like maybe another videographer, maybe like really amazing epic drone shots is like part of their thing. Like it's okay to just kind of have like a basic drone shot. So like that kind of goes back to me like simplifying it and not feeling like I have to do be all things in every wedding film and just kind of go back to the basics of there was a great emotional moment during the letter reading. And that's going to, I'm going to just kind of build everything around that. And I will say, I would emphasize, you know, if there's an area like, so for me, I'm still trying to improve on lighting in terms of, you know, how I light, you know, the reception and, you know, toast and things like that. And so, and that's just something I've been working on a lot, you know, the past year. And so, you know, for those listening, if, you know, if there's an area that you do want to improve on, just, you know, really go, you know, watch some YouTube videos on it. And I've learned a ton from, you know, just watching YouTube videos over the years. Craig Adams, you know, several years ago, I was watching a lot of his content, and, you know, Matt Johnson, you know, just there's a lot of great educational content that's out there. You've got a course as well. I think, did you close that recently, or is that?
Yeah. Okay. that recently closed, but it'll open again soon-ish, so I can put the link for that. No. Alrighty guys, well that wraps up today's episode with Brian, and as always, his links for his Instagram and his website will be in the show notes below. And just reach out to him, say thank you so much for being on the podcast, it was really encouraging. I know filmmakers love to hear things like that. And also, if you guys have been loving this podcast, please consider, or please if you can, leave a review. It really, really helps the podcast get to more people, and I also read every single review. So if you just want to like literally make my day, just write a little review. It will make me so happy. And just if you've been loving it, obviously, if you've been hating it, then maybe don't write a review. But yeah, just write a review. That would be really awesome. It would allow me to be encouraged, and also it would help the podcast reach more people. Alrighty, guys. Well, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate you. All the links for everything we talked about will be in the show notes below, and I will see you guys on the next episode. Thank you.